the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Hi, everyone. I am Paul Horn, Lead Financial Planner for Financial Sense Wealth Management. And again, I'm filling in for Jim as he's on his vacation. On today's show, we're going to discuss behavioral biases and how they can derail an investor and retirement security.
And I'm Chris Prytower. As humans, despite being highly rational creatures, we're still heavily influenced by our emotions. As hard as some people may try to be like Sheldon Cooper on The Big Bang Theory, a human emotionless robot, we will never be able to fully get there.
I would completely agree. Emotions really do play a vital role in all our decision making. Personally, I do believe the markets will never be completely efficient as long as humans are involved. Just look at any earnings season as we see stock prices consistently fluctuating very high or very low in what are oftentimes knee-jerk reactions from investors hearing news that is oftentimes of no consequence.
That's a good point, Paul. Several studies have been done, and for investors, the two primary emotional drivers are fear and greed. And from those studies, it appears that fear is two times stronger in motivating people than greed is.
Chris, that is absolutely correct. Greed is a strong emotion, but fear is two times stronger in terms of motivating people. Looking at greed is something actually macro strategists will even look for at the end of a cycle as they're looking for signs of euphoria and potential bubbles forming. A great example of this recently was the Bitcoin craze that we witnessed last year. I like to refer to this as the barista barometer, meaning if you're getting investment advice served with your coffee, it may be a good indication that a bubble is forming.
Well, how do personal biases negatively impact investors?
We all know the old story, buy low and sell high. But for most investors out there, they honestly do the exact opposite, where they buy high and sell low. This is caused by people seeing friends and family making money in the stock market. So they go out and purchase the stock when it's at a high level. And then after a correction happens, they do have that knee-jerk reaction and fear sets in and they sell and lock in those loss on those investments. Unfortunately, we saw this all too common as many clients and investors sold at the bottom in 2008. In fact, I've spoken to clients that got out of the market at that point in 2008, and they didn't return into the market several years later, missing on potentially huge returns.
Well, to quote Mr. Buffett, quote, "Investors should remember that excitement and expenses are their enemies, and if they insist on trying to time their participation in equities, they should try to be fearful when others are greedy, and greedy only when others are fearful," end quote.
That is one of my favorite quotes. It's funny that you mentioned that. That is a great way to help reduce the impulse to buy high and sell low, just simply remembering that quote.
Well, everyone has emotions, Paul, so we know that emotions are influencing their investments, often to their detriment, but how do we develop these biases in the first place?
A great example would have been a millennial investor about 5 years ago, as some studies have shown that they tended to be more conservative investors than their parents. This was due to the fact that they had limited experience in the markets and really witnessed their parents and grandparents lose significant amounts of money during the Great Recession. This happened, and as a result, they tended to invest more conservatively and held higher levels of cash. I would imagine that trend to not be true today. But again, that would be as a result of experiencing the longest bull market on record.
Now, are there different types of biases that influence investor behavior?
There are dozens of different types of biases that impact investor behavior. This has been an ongoing research since the 70s, and there's 30, 40, 50 different biases really listed out there. Surely there are too many biases to list at this point, and it would make for a rather boring podcast. But all biases can be broken down into two types, cognitive and emotional.
Well, what do you mean by cognitive bias? Is there an example you can give to our listeners?
Consider a cognitive bias to be a sort of rule of thumb, a mental shortcut of sorts, something that we use all the time, whether they're based on facts or not. Unfortunately, since they may not be based on facts, they can oftentimes be misleading or based on false information. One example that I do see often is confirmation bias. This is when people put more value on opinions that confirm our own. example would be if you have the viewpoint that the market's going to crash, you're going to naturally gravitate to articles and people who espouse the same viewpoint. With social media and how fast the flow of information is today, this is something to be very cognizant of.
Well, that's interesting. What about emotional bias, though? What's an example of that?
This one's pretty easy to identify. It's really just anything that leads us to act on emotions rather than fact. Emotions always elicit strong reactions, and as a result, an emotional bias can be a very difficult thing to overcome. Imagine holding a stock that unexpectedly has large losses, and as a result, the business prospects begin to look grim. Could you stomach selling that stock and investing in a higher quality one? Many people in this scenario would refuse to sell the stock, and this is called loss aversion bias.
Now, Paul, everyone has a different personality. How do you see people impacted by that?
Really, I've seen personality styles negatively impact investors in a number of ways. One of those ways, unfortunately, can be inaction. One of the most common times that this happens is what I would call paralysis by analysis. When they feel overwhelmed by too much information to make a decision, and therefore they make no decision at all. Another example I could think of would be what's called the ostrich effect. And this is when people decide to tune out bad news, as it is often unpleasant. And they simply just choose to be like an ostrich and put their head in the sand instead.
Well, it's interesting that it can lead to no change. Is it possible that behaviors can lead to an investor being too conservative with their investments?
This may surprise some listeners, but personal biases can actually lead to people becoming too conservative. Loss aversion. Again, remember we talked earlier that fear is twice as a powerful influencer than greed is, can really lead to people being too conservative. Being too conservative can lead some investors to be invested simply in cash and cash assets. And as a result, over the long term, their assets won't even keep up with the rate of inflation.
Well, I could see that, but I imagine that's probably more the exception than the norm. How does behavior lead some people to take too much risk?
Unfortunately, the biases definitely can help people take too much risk, and that is a concern given where we are in the business cycle currently. Overconfidence many times has led to subpar returns for investors. Of course, this would be known as an overconfidence bias, but there's other types of biases that can play a role as well, like we talked about earlier, the confirmation bias. Getting an investment call right 10 years ago doesn't mean that you're necessarily a superior investor or that the investment strategy is going to continue to work over a long period of time. Simply consider value versus growth investing. There's times that you want to be in value-oriented stocks and times you want to be in growth-oriented stocks. Overconfidence will lead to a less willingness to listen to others as you put too much emphasis on your own beliefs and your own abilities.
Well, it makes sense that biases would lead investors to become too aggressive. Given that we are experiencing one of the longest bull markets ever recorded, how might this play into sequence risk?
By now, our listeners should be familiar with sequence risk. In case you are not, this simply means having bad luck in the timing of your retirement. Imagine someone trying to retire in the middle of 2008, in the middle of the Great Recession. In terms of sequence risk, I am most concerned right now for investors that are taking excessive risk or investors that are going to be slow to change their portfolios when the market does turn.
Now, Paul, are there any biases that impact our own industry and even the advice that the industry provides?
Yeah, absolutely. And trained industry professionals should be aware of their own biases when analyzing the markets. One bias that does concern me currently that I'm seeing a lot is the anchoring bias. People tend to make forecasts about the market close to current levels. This will lead investors to not realize the potential downside risk for their investments.
So how does someone near or in retirement reduce the potential impact of bias and sequence risk?
Really, the first step to managing your biases is to be honest with yourself and identify which biases are you being most impacted by. Are you someone who avoids bad news? Are you someone that has a high level of confidence in your own abilities? Do you tend to only surround yourself with people that has the same ideas as you? Or are you someone that just prefers to go with the flow and follow the crowd? Taking stock of your own personality can help you more acutely identify your potential biases. Perhaps on another podcast, we can delve more into the personality types and the biases that they are impacted by. Working with a professional, though, can be a good way to help identify and mitigate the impact of our behavior on investment decisions.
So we've talked about bias. Paul, how do you help your clients manage their biases?
The number one thing we try and do is make sure that we have a plan in place. This can be an investment policy statement, also known as an IPS, to help define the investment strategy. Along with that, we'll be using a comprehensive financial plan. And the reason we want to have these in place is when life happens and the markets do correct, it helps remove the emotional biases. There is a plan in place to remind us or serve as an anchor of sorts to hold on to in times of duress.
It's really interesting to understand how our decisions, especially those around our finances, how those decisions are impacted by our behavior and emotions. This is something that really is not being discussed enough.
Chris, you're absolutely correct. Research has been around for decades, but only in the last several years has it began to become more mainstream. I do believe, though, it is very important to discuss in light of our current market valuations and where we are currently in the business cycle.
Well, Paul, it's time for our real-life case study, a hypothetical illustration based on real-life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed to protect privacy. And of course, we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points that are being made here today.
For this week's case study, we're going to be talking about overcoming emotional biases. And we're going to be focusing on a couple named Andy and Sarah Niebly. Let's talk a little bit about Andy and Sarah. Andy is age 59. He's enjoyed a fast-paced and demanding career as a data analyst for a mid-sized research company. He really is looking to stop working, but he dreads the idea of retiring as he just has no idea what he wants to do at that point. He is also concerned about their assets and making sure that it lasts throughout a long retirement. Sarah, age 58, spent the last 15 years as an executive assistant at the local high school. She's been mired in the day-to-day politics and really just looking to escape and retire and spend more time with her husband. Andy has managed most of the family's finances and has made most of their investment decisions over their marriage. He does consider himself to be pretty savvy and aggressive by nature. Unfortunately, they did lose a lot of money in the last downturn. But he does believe in his abilities in picking the correct investments to help them get the best returns going forward. Sarah does consider herself, though, to be more conservative. And after losing half of their net worth in the last financial crisis, really is looking to work with an advisor to help them better align their investments and make sure that they don't run out of money in retirement. So Andy and Sarah are looking to retire in the next couple years, but they do have concerns about what retirement is going to look like for them, and making sure that they're both financially and mentally prepared. When we look at their current investments, as Andy indicated, they are more aggressive than maybe they necessarily should be. Looking at their portfolio, it does have a risk score of 81, with their ideal score based on their current financial situation really being 63. In terms of their budget, they're in an excellent position. They have great income at $190,000 a year. Expenses are relatively low compared to income of $100,000, gives them a nice surplus of $90,000 per year. The great thing about their expenses is only a small amount of it is discretionary. Most of it is things that they do need to pay. Looking at the retirement budget, expenses are expected to be roughly the same, still about $98,000. Overall net worth, they have a good net worth at $1.8 million, with investments representing about half of the total net worth. They're about $960,000. Taking a look at their overall asset allocation, it is, again, an aggressive score with 40% of the total allocation in hard assets and stocks representing 50% of the total portfolio. That only leaves less than 10% for bonds and cash. Looking at the recommendations for both Andy and Sarah, we wanted to help them identify some of the personal biases that were impacting their investment decisions. The first one was being loss aversion, as they were refusing to sell some investments that had large losses, and they just couldn't get over the psychological hurdle of selling those and reinvesting in higher quality investments. And there was also a lot of confirmation bias. So Andy was making his investment decisions based on people that had the same views that he did. As a result, we did recommend that they reallocate their investments. And this was done for a couple of reasons. First one was to help reduce the impact of personal biases, to give them a more diversified portfolio, reduce their overall risk tolerance. And by doing so also, this was a way to help manage potential issues with sequence risk. The last thing we want to do is talk with them about being mentally prepared for retirement. The worst thing that could happen is that they retire and have no idea what they want to do. So there's things that they can do and conversations that they should be having to help better sort out what it is that they want to accomplish in retirement. And we talked with them more about not considering retirement as the end of the road, but really just a transition to a new chapter. Thank you so much for listening. And again, these case studies can be found on financialsense.com. For Chris Prytower and myself, thank you so much for listening and enjoy the rest of your day.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.